Welcome to the fifth episode of the Navigate podcast, a series created and organized by Merck. This series aims to help listeners better navigate and understand the changing NHS landscape. I'm your host, Amira Amin, Director of Market Access, Pricing and Government Affairs for Merck UK and Ireland. In today's conversation, we're going to be exploring the changing multiple sclerosis, or MS, service landscape and gain insights into the changes needed to improve service provision from the perspective of organisations that represent people living with MS. The range of symptoms and disabilities caused by MS and the unpredictable nature of the disease makes it particularly challenging to manage and means that providing optimal care is reliant on having a comprehensive and diverse service landscape. The wider NHS landscape in which MS services operate is changing. In July 2022, 42 new ICSs assumed statutory responsibility for planning and funding health and care services across their area. Over the next couple of years, commissioning of MS services will gradually transfer to ICSs, first through joint commissioning models before transferring fully. And finally, we have a new clinical reference group for neurology, which is working on updating commissioning policies and service specifications for MS. These changes represent both risks and opportunities to the MS service landscape. The risk of widening disparities and inequitable access remains a concern, but there are also significant opportunities to reform and improve service provision. Patient voice must be at the heart of this reform. And I'm delighted to be joined today by David Martin, CEO of the MS Trust, and Georgina Carr, CEO of the Neurological Alliance, who can provide the perspectives of those living with MS on how this reform should look and the changes needed to improve MS services. Georgina and David, welcome to the Navigate podcast. It's great to have you with us today.
Great to be here. Thanks for inviting us.
Thank you.
We may have listeners who are unfamiliar with the MS Trust and the Neurological Alliance. To start today's conversation, can you give an overview of your organisations and the work they do? David, let's go to you first.
Yeah, well, so the MS Trust, it's a national charity based in Letchworth in Hertfordshire. It's celebrating its 30th birthday this year. And we are the only MS charity providing additional MS nurses into the NHS. As well as that, we're providing information and lots of other resources for people living with MS at the same time.
And I'm from the Neurological Alliance in England, which is a collaboration of 100 organisations now, all committed to improving treatment, care and support for the one in six that live in this country with a neurological condition. And we're trying to bring about change by influencing public policy to improve treatment care.
Great. And thank you. Later in the episode, we can learn more about the work your organisations are leading on. So it's really great to be able to have the perspectives of two quite diverse organisations. I'm looking forward to discussing the MS service landscape with you both today, especially given the reform that's happening currently in the NHS. So I wanted to examine the current state of MS services today in England. Can you both share your opinions on what is working well, but also where people living with MS might be facing challenges in accessing the care and services they need?
So I think there's a mixed bag in MS services up and down the country, certainly from what we're hearing from people living with multiple sclerosis at the moment. The upside is, the really good news is, there's been a huge acceleration in the access to treatments, including post-pandemic, really. So the number of disease-modifying treatments now is very close to 20, more than we've ever had before. Although, interestingly, only about sort of two-thirds of people are actually accessing those treatments. The challenges, I think, is the poor access to mental health services in particular up and down the country. We've just done a survey, which we just published the results of. The survey was carried out in January of about 2,000 people living with multiple sclerosis. And they were telling us, just 56% of them were saying that they have got significant challenges with their mental health caused by their MS. And so there's much more support needed in that space.
Totally agree. And certainly what we're hearing from people with MS, but also from our membership, which largely are voluntary sector organisations that provide information and support or fund research into MS. And I think to start with the positives, the acceleration in treatment provision really is something to be celebrated. You know, if I think about when I first started working in MS, which was nearly a decade ago, there was just four disease-modifying therapies available on the NHS. And as Dave has just talked about, there's now 20. And actually, in theory, we have a DMT that's available for every type of MS, which was unheard of 10 years ago. So that's really exciting. I'm also seeing greater collaboration, to be honest with you, across neurological organizations. I mentioned our membership figure that's grown significantly over the last 3 years, despite the stresses and strains of the pandemic. The MS Trust, together with the MS Society, MS Therapy Centres, Shift MS, etc., and Overcoming MS, are absolutely working together in new and different ways. And as somebody who's, you know, we're in the business of collaboration, that's really, really humbling to see. Access to mental health support is poor across the board. We've also done a survey of about 8,500 people affected by neurological conditions. And about half said that they hadn't been asked about their mental health by a healthcare professional in the last 3 years. And actually, that's something quite simple that we could start to implement now. But also access to things like palliative care, end-of-life care, social care is really poor and actually getting worse. And we have various kind of pieces of evidence to support that. And finally, access to financial support is just far too stressful. You know, if I think about the experiences shared from people affected by neurological conditions in accessing things like personal independence payment, which is supposed to help with the extra costs of living with a condition like MS, it's just far too long and far too stressful a process that isn't reflective of the realities of living with MS. So that absolutely has to change, and with some urgency, given the pressures people are facing right now.
And the reality is as well, Georgina and Mira, that I still think the workforce is overstretched at the moment. So the pandemic might have officially finished, but the reality is that the waiting list, the neurology waiting list, is still north of 210,000. And I'm still hearing of so many MS services up and down the country who are running to standstill. And that's having a huge impact on many people living with multiple sclerosis.
Well, thank you both for those perspectives. It sort of leads quite nicely into my next question. In the introduction, I mentioned the crossroads at which we find ourselves in. So the new ICSs, the ongoing transfer of commissioning for specialized services to ICS level, which includes MS, and the new neurological clinical reference group that's recently formed. I now wanted to focus more on the opportunity that this reform brings. You nicely outline the challenges faced by MS patients in accessing the care that they need. But if we look into the future, can you both discuss some of the improvements that people living with MS would like to see across the service landscape? And how can we really ensure that their voices are heard?
One thing I think that would be really helpful, and again, I'm thinking about what I hear from people affected by MS, is anything that will reduce the need for them to tell their story over and again and again and again. So, you know, we often get reports of poor coordination between services or lack of information. And then again, that leading to having to tell that story over again, which can be really quite traumatic. So, you know, ensuring really good care coordination, supported by a decent workforce, that they too are supported around their kind of well-being, as well as just numbers in post, is really, really important. And you know, there are some really innovative examples of good practice that are happening despite really, really challenging circumstances. So people are using, for example, data in different ways to identify gaps in their service provision. They're involving people affected by MS in looking at, you know, how you bring about integrated care as well through focus groups, direct feedback, that sort of thing. And also, finally, I'll just say health inequalities, it feels like it's being taken far, far more seriously. And that's absolutely right. We know that if you live in a more deprived area of England, you're less likely to access a DMT. And we know that because the data is better than it was previously. And, you know, people are then thinking, okay, so what does that mean for my service? How do I make sure it's as inclusive and equitable as possible? And that has to continue.
Absolutely. And there's a real postcode lottery up and down the country. There are great services operating next door to services which are really not great at all. And that's a real concern for us at the MS Trust. And we hear this time and again from people living with multiple sclerosis. We think there could certainly be more resources in the MS services themselves. The last survey that we did, we found there was a shortage of about 149 MS nurses up and down the country. And so that means that probably two-thirds of people living with MS are basically not being able to access their MS nurse because the MS nurses that they do have a caseload which is far too big. So that means if they have an issue, they have a spasm, they simply need some advice. They can't get hold of their MS nurse, so they're then having to rely on going to their GP, maybe even having to go to A&E as well. So we think moving forward, there is a need for more care coordinators, and in particular, more MS nurses who have this specialist insight and this specialist knowledge. knowledge, and then people can get the information that they want and need. And yes, self-management is important, but there are times when you need that expert insight. You know who to go to pick the phone up, maybe, or to drop an email, whichever way it may be. We're doing our best as the MS Trust and working with other charities as well to try and address that gap. But I think the sooner we can get that gap down, the better.
And I guess there are lots of opportunities, I think, presented to us by the current public policy landscape that you touched on in your question, really, Amir. So, you know, we have a new national clinical director for neurology. That means that we have clinical leadership right at the heart and at the top of NHS England. We haven't had that for the past 6 years, and it absolutely makes a big difference to just have that seat at the table. We have other specialty advisors and so on across other areas of neuroscience too, and that's really, really exciting. The premise of integrated care systems, that we should be bringing together everybody with skin in the game at a regional level to plan integrated models of care and so on, actually, you know, it's a good principle. I don't think anybody's necessarily going to fight that. And actually, that kind of principle of collaboration rather than competition within those reforms is really, really helpful. What's really challenging is it's not quite clear at the moment how money associated with kind of specialized services that previously was held at a national level is in fact going to be delegated, and how on earth the structures will facilitate genuine cross ICS working and public and patient involvement in that. So that does have to be addressed with some urgency. We've also got a neuroscience transformation program happening at a national level that will be setting out how neurology services ought to be commissioned in the future. So not everybody has a specialty kind of transformation program like that. So it's something that should be encouraged. And again, we should, I think, get behind. And to give an example of how that's already changing things, they've just, in the last couple of weeks, developed a new neurology data dashboard that for the first time collates NHS activity data, including on MS at ICS level, to help primarily clinicians and kind of service managers to interrogate what's happening on the ground. To be honest with you, that wouldn't have been the case had we not had that high level support, a wealth of the voluntary sectors behind us, really urging for change, and the transformation program in place. So I think there are those opportunities, but it's going to take an awful lot of collaboration and listening, to be honest with you, as a sector.
Absolutely. And there is more collaboration. I'm sensing that at the moment, but I still think there's still too much competition. We were involved in the Kudos Awards at the MS Trust conference a month or two ago. We didn't have as many entries as we previously seen, and I'm guessing that's because the services are running to try and stand still at the moment. But my sense is the appetite for understanding and hearing about some of the best practice in the sector, and there's some really good best practice. I think the appetite for that is lower than I've seen previously. So I think the sooner we can get back to whatever the new normal is, the better for the whole sector and for people, particularly for people living with multiple sclerosis.
And I guess we've both touched on there are absolutely innovative things happening despite a really challenging external environment. You know, people are kind of firefighting rather than thinking about the future all the time. But then it makes me think, well, okay, as a sector, primarily as a voluntary sector, but also for those within industry, okay, what's the most helpful thing that we can do? And actually providing the time and space and a bit of resource to help people think through some of those solutions through things like the Kudos Awards and your conference. David, I know Merck and other companies also have a range of service improvement initiatives and so on. And to be frank, long may it continue, but let's not duplicate, because that's probably going to be unhelpful if we do.
I mean, it's clear that still there's quite a lot to improve, or a lot of services that could still improve. And how can we move forward in order to improve the care and service that patients with MS receive? If we think about, and you've mentioned some of these already, what are the sort of more practical and achievable steps that can be taken to deliver some of these changes?
So I've touched on some of these, but I genuinely think this new data dashboard that's been developed by NHSE is really helpful. The data is only going to be as good as what goes into it. So if there's inaccuracy in it, then actually that's a conversation in itself as to how can you improve the quality of the data in your patch. And then from that, you know, how can you involve people affected by neurological conditions in identifying what those gaps are? And again, I'm aware of a couple of centres that have done that using the MS Optimal Pathway that was developed initially by the NHSE Transformation Programme, now by the National Neuroscience Advisory Group, to identify what's missing and how can we improve that and what practical steps can we put in place. So doing all of that would be incredibly, incredibly valuable. I think we do need to be considering the needs of minoritised communities by default. And what we do, I've touched on the inequity of access to DMTs by deprivation, for example. It's still too commonplace that we're only speaking to those that actually get to the door, if you like, of either the voluntary sector or specialist services. And we know there's a lot of people that, quite frankly, we're not hearing from. And so we absolutely have to kind of redouble our efforts on that front. That's the only way we're going to truly kind of level up care. And then finally, I think there are opportunities to think about how digital solutions might be able to help with some of the challenges around resource, although that has to be done with real care. For, you know, I know remote consultations, for example, don't work for everybody for a variety of reasons, not least of all clinicians that are delivering them. And we do need to be thinking about follow-up, for example, and how we can make sure that we are absolutely kind of meeting need and picking up changes in condition, etc. But nonetheless, data and digital are transforming at a rapid pace, and we'd be fools if we don't truly consider how exactly that can help to transform care.
And from our point of view, the MS Trust is very much an evidence-based organisation. And I would point anybody who's listening to this today to think about looking at the research and the survey work that's done by the Neuro Alliance, because the insights from almost 10,000 people living with neurological conditions are so compelling. And I think the evidence that's contained within there would help almost everybody improve their services if they're absorbed and taken on board properly.
Also, I guess in terms of the, you know, 7,000 patients diagnosed with MS per year, that's growing by 2.4%. Is there any learnings during the COVID period that you think could help with increasing that efficiency of getting patients through the system and getting treated? You mentioned sort of remote consultations. Is there anything else that you think could be helpful?
From an MS Trust point of view, we've picked up that phones have been used a lot more now and emails have been used a lot more. I think pre-COVID, everybody was very much about face-to-face. There's now a real push, particularly from the MS nurses and some of the MS teams themselves, to make use of the different ways of communicating in this day and age. But we are picking up some concerns from probably around a third of people living with multiple sclerosis, then they're not always comfortable with this. And I have heard from a number of neurologists who are concerned that if they're not seeing people face to face, it's not just a case of what those people might be sharing about their condition, but sometimes it might be also what's being observed at the same time, really. So I think the end of face to face consultations isn't there just yet.
Totally agree with that. We've done a bit of research quite recently about remote consultations following up from the survey that we did. Again, this is across all neurological conditions, but about 40% preferred face-to-face compared to remote consultations. Nobody really liked phone, to be honest with you. Tended to prefer video conference, if anything, but it very much depended what that contact was for. Also, a red line seemed to be first contact should not be done remotely because you need to build that rapport and so on. And I think the clinicians that I've spoken to about that would agree with that. And then, of course, we need to be thinking about kind of accessibility of technology and inclusivity and so on. So I think it's a helpful adjunct, but as David said, not the end of face-to-face, but think about how you offer kind of personalised choice as much as possible. The other area that I was going to touch on was just the role of advice and guidance around referral. So I think we saw an acceleration of some models around that during COVID through necessity. It isn't always commissioned appropriately. That absolutely has to be addressed. There are some tools on the NHS Futures platform that looks at consistency of that model, because it was a little bit variable in terms of how people were triaging people during the pandemic. But again, you know, if we can get advice to primary care colleagues more quickly to aid appropriate referral, then that's got to be a helpful thing. And the final thing was just within clinical teams themselves, been at a few clinical conferences recently where there's lots of different evidence to suggest that actually multidisciplinary team meetings can be held pretty effectively online and in some cases over email. So, you know, thinking those things through and applying those lessons in what is, I suppose, a post-pandemic era, I think it's really, really sensible.
So finally, we know that patient organisations do a huge amount of work, both on their own and in collaboration with the NHS, to deliver on some of the services that patients need. It would be great to hear about projects that are currently being undertaken by your organisations that are addressing the challenges, or some of the challenges that we discussed today.
So I've touched on some of them. So things like being involved in the NHS England Neuroscience Transformation Programme, which is very much going to set out what that future commissioning model looks like in England, at least, is going to continue to be a priority. We're also engaging with a range of integrated care system colleagues to basically make the case that services for people affected by neurological conditions are every ICS's business. You don't have to have a neuroscience centre on your patch for it to matter. You know, if you've got a DGH within your region, you will absolutely be experiencing emergencies of people affected by neurological conditions. So it's in, as I say, everybody's business to improve things. We've also got a national campaign running called Back the One in Six, because there's one in six of us that live with a neurological condition in the country. We're asking all governments across the UK to collaborate and to set up a new national neuro task force to essentially identify areas of common interest and best practice. I'm really pleased to say we had 19,000 people recently support that campaign, more than 100 organisations as well from across the country. And we're just about to hand in that petition to the Department of Health in Westminster. So that's really, really exciting. We haven't got the task force just yet, but we're hopeful of that in the coming months. And then I guess two final things just to mention. One is we've got another survey coming that will be in 2024 for launch in 2025. So if you'd like to get involved in that, then we're always really, really open to partnership and collaboration. And then finally, we've been together with kind of clinical colleagues, we've been developing optimal pathways across a range of different condition areas, including MS, but we pretty much cover most of neurology in those. And they're now being made public on the NNAG website. So, and it seems to be that they're already in use and helpful for some of that service improvement that I mentioned. So hopefully that all adds up to improvements.
And from an MS Trust point of view, I think our sense is at the moment, while the MS services have certainly got back onto their feet following the pandemic, I think by and large, NHS is still in crisis. So we've put our heads together at the charity to decide what is it we can do if MS services are at the crossroads at the moment. Is there something that we can do over and above what we've ever done before? We are the only MS charity providing additional resources into the NHS. So what we're going to try and do over the next 12 months or so is to try and provide 5 additional MS nurses into the areas of greatest need. And this will be more nurses than we've ever provided in 1 year. And if we think we can do that by collaborating with some of our partners, we think we can make a meaningful difference to the lives of people living with multiple sclerosis. But it's a big ask. It's a big challenge. It's a big ambition for a relatively small charity. But we're optimistic that we should be able to do that over the next year or so.
Great. Well, thank you both. I just wanted to thank you for your time today. And it's been a pleasure having you on the podcast.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you, Georgina and David, for your time today and providing your valuable insight into the current state of MS services and the perspective of people living with MS on what needs to change in order to improve care. It's clear that challenges in service provision remain, but it's also evident that there are very dedicated individuals looking to secure improvements, and it will be interesting to watch this evolution over the coming years. As always, if you have any comments on this episode or would like to know more about a particular topic, please leave a comment below. You can also subscribe or follow us wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Navigate podcast.